Next up, it's time for a celestial showdown. All you stargazers, you may be aware that this weekend and early next week, two heavyweights will be competing for your attention in the night sky. The first contender, of course, the famous Perseid meteor shower, what NASA has referred to as the fireball champion of meteor showers. Second in the ring, the supermoon. Remember that from last month? Yeah, the biggest, brightest moon of the year. Now, it's a lousy matchup if you happen to be a meteor fan like myself, because a bright moon is bad news for watching meteor showers. But even if you have trouble seeing the shooting stars, my next guest says you can listen to them instead. Nicole Gallucci is an informal education lead at CosmoQuest, postdoctoral researcher at Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville, Illinois. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks, Ira. Glad to be here.
Dr. Gallucci, we got this battle for our attention coming up, supermoon versus Perseids. How much is the moon going to cut down our visibility?
Oh, yeah. So when the shower actually peaks, the supermoon or the full moon, anytime there's a full moon, it's going to brighten up the sky, so you can't see as many meteors. You can't see the fainter meteors. I still suggest going out and giving it a shot, but you want to kind of position yourself somewhere where the moon is blocked by a building or a tree or something like that, just to get the most you can out of the meteor shower.
Mm-hmm. Now, most people, whenever I can, I go out and watch a meteor shower. But you say, why not listen to them? How does that work?
Absolutely. There is a technique that you can use to listen for the effect of a meteor as it goes up and burns up through the atmosphere. When a piece of space dust, so this particular meteor shower is coming from a comet Swift-Tuttle, these little tiny pieces of comet that the Earth is plowing into, these pieces burn up in the atmosphere. When they do that, they leave a trail of charged particles. Hmm. Now, these charged particles can do something really interesting. They can reflect radio waves. Radio waves are a type of light, not sound, but our instruments can turn that into a sound that we can hear. So the way you listen for these meteor showers is you get an FM radio and you tune it to a station that's pretty distant. You can just barely hear it. If you have it pointing the right direction and a meteor comes by, it's going to boost that signal just a little bit. And so you can hear the signal boost on your FM radio for when a meteor comes by.
That's what it sounds like.
That's a clip from space weather radio. So you can do this at home with a fairly simple setup. Mm-hmm. But there are people who have built much bigger radio receiving antennas. And that particular, you can tune in on your browser to spaceweatherradio.com and listen into these people's equipment and hear that meteor going overhead. And right now during the shower is a great time to do it.
Yeah, you know, but our listeners are too geeky for going to the internet to listen to someone else's radio telescope or radio.
Oh, sure.
So you have something, instructions called the Itty Bitty Radio Telescope.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Yeah, so there is a small setup. I built one recently. It's the Itty Bitty Radio Telescope. It's a really good educational tool about radio astronomy, and you can look at the brightest thing you can see is the sun. And this is using, you can use a discarded TV satellite dish. I just, you know, emailed around, got some friends to give me their dishes for free.
They throw them out. You know, when you get a new sat dish, they throw out the old ones. So there are a lot of old ones hanging out there.
Oh, yeah. Go on Craigslist. Go on FreeCycle. People are just giving them away. And you can take one of those and add a little bit of electronics to the back end, and you have a really simple radio telescope. I know we'll have some instructions up on the site, but you basically use a signal meter to read the signal in from the satellite dish, and it has a little whine, and the whine changes pitch to a higher pitch when you hit something that gives off a lot of radio waves, like the sun. It's an easy do-it-yourself project. You could do a little bit of soldering while you're at it and build your own little radio telescope.
Wow, it's great. And we have the full instructions on our website at sciencefriday.com/radio telescope. You are a radio astronomer.
Mm-hmm.
What is the advantage of studying space through radio waves rather than, you know, visible light waves?
There's a lot that we can see in the universe that give off radio waves that don't necessarily give off optical light, or that optical light is obscured somehow. A lot of emission from, say, the center of our galaxy, supermassive black hole, the center of our galaxy, we can't see in visible light because it's blocked by a lot of dust in the disk of the galaxy, but we can detect the radio emissions coming from it. There are supermassive black holes in lots of galaxies around the universe that we can detect. Also, certain molecules, complex molecules in interstellar space will give off radio waves as well, so we can study a lot of astrochemistry by using radio telescopes.
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Oh, gosh. Star-forming regions. I spent some time working on a project looking for water masers. So that's similar to a laser, but in the microwave regime. And these were pockets of gas that were giving off a lot of emission around supermassive black holes. And we were able to detect these and study their mm-hmm. motions in galaxies, in distant galaxies.
You also have some apps to recommend for a meteor tracking.
Right. Yeah, there are a couple meteor tracking apps. One of them ties into the American Meteor Society. So they take observations of fireballs, meteors, all kinds of phenomena like that. They've been doing it since the early 1900s, but now they have an app for all your mobile phones. And then also Meteor Counter is one that goes where your data will go to NASA, and you can actually record the cell phone, of course, records your time and location, and you can record the brightness of each meteor as you see it during the shower or any time of night.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite little apps, so while you're out there looking for the meteorites, you might be able to spot the International Space Station. And I have something called Spot the Station. That tells you exactly what time and where the space station is going to show up.
I have an app like that, too. People are surprised if you're standing outside, especially somewhere busy, and they walk by and they ask what you're doing. You point up, you go, this International Space Station is going to pass right overhead. And it does. And they think, wow, how did you know that? It's a really handy app.
it's true. I've actually used it. It's very useful. But you don't want to ruin your night vision, though, staring at a screen at night, right? That's going to take away seeing in the dark.
Absolutely. A lot of these apps have a night mode such that they will automatically dim and turn all their fonts red so that the red light doesn't interfere with your night vision nearly as much. Or you can get other apps that will dim your screen, redden your screen as the sun goes down. So I keep mine very dim and very low and as red as possible. And I suggest that to people whenever they come to my star parties, because you can ruin your night vision very quickly and it takes a while to get it back.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to wait for, we're going to be in the Perseids. You could go out now and see all this stuff, every night. And it'll get a little better perhaps with the Perseids, maybe if the moon doesn't wash it out, but it's out there all
sure.
the time.
Sure. I mean, if you stay outside long enough, you'll see a meteor, you'll see satellites go overhead. The Earth actually collects about 40 tons of material every day from space. So somewhere there's always little meteors happening. But you're right. During the Perseids, you're going to see quite a bit more. And the Perseids are really nice because they have a long peak. It peaks over several days. Hmm. And in fact, if you've been going out the last couple of weeks, you may have seen some meteors from the Perseids or fireballs already, because it has a pretty long shower time.
Mm. So give us the ABCs one more time about if you want to go out and see the Perseids, what's the best way to do it? What time? Get behind a building, you say, where the moon doesn't shine in your eyes?
Right. If you can get to a dark site, you want to get as far away from human-made light as possible. You can block the moon with a building or a sign or a tree nearby. And you want to be out in the early morning hours, because that's when that part of the Earth that you're standing on is plowing right into that stream of comet debris. And look towards the north. That's where the constellation Perseus is, and that's close to where the radiant will be. That's where the meteors appear to come from.
And if our listeners want to get involved in space research, I know you're involved with a citizen science project called CosmoQuest. Tell us about how they can get involved.
Sure. You can come to CosmoQuest.org. We have several projects using NASA data from several NASA space missions. We're looking at the moon, we're looking at Mercury, and we're looking at asteroid Vesta. And we are crowdsourcing the data analysis because there's so much data and so many craters and so many surface features to mark and identify. People still do quite a bit better than computers at this. And so we are asking you guys to come and help us do the science. And we've got one paper published already and more coming along the way.
Mm-hmm. And so what do people actually have to do? Is it a formal process? How do they have to sign up for this?
You just sign up with an email address and a username, and it takes you through a short video tutorial showing you how to use the tool. It works all in your browser. And then you get to get work started on these images, these high-resolution images of planetary surfaces in our solar system. And the tool lets you mark craters or mark any weird features that you see. And you build up a gallery of your own work to check on later.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Dr. Nicole Gallucci, who is informal education lead at CosmoQuest. Do you have to have a special talent at all to become part of CosmoQuest, or you just have to know how to look at something and pick it out?
Yeah, it's we've had people from all walks of life with all kinds of backgrounds joining us at CosmoQuest. I think our youngest crater mapper is about 5 years old that I've heard from. I've at least heard from his dad sending us pictures. Being able to recognize shapes is something that anyone can pretty much do. So as long as you have an internet connection and can look at and manipulate those images, you can go ahead and join us.
If you're a Moonie, and you mean somebody who likes to look at the moon, is this a good time to look at it or a bad time to look at it?
It's not a great time when it's full. I like to watch the moon when it's in first quarter because it's up in the evening hours, which is a decent time for most people. And the terminator, or the line between daylight and night, or shadow on the moon, cuts through the middle of the surface that's facing us. And so you can really see sharp details in a telescope. So going outside and looking at the moon during a full moon, it kind of gets a bit washed out.
And if you use a telescope, you could hurt your eyes, people have told me, because it's really it's very bright through a telescope.
Yes, we recommend, I stick a little color filter or a lunar filter on the end of my telescope, because even though it's not dangerous, like looking at the sun, it can hurt your eyes quite a bit if you have a large telescope.
And tell us about the supermoon, why it's called a supermoon.
Sure. So the supermoon is a full moon that occurs when the moon is at the closest part of its orbit. It looks about a little bit bigger in the sky. It's about 15% bigger than it would be if it was at its furthest. If you're just casually looking up at the moon, you probably won't notice the difference, but it is a little bit bigger and a little bit brighter. And so we call that, that seems to have taken up the name supermoon.
We need super for everything. No,
everything's super.
Yeah.
Well, it's the supermoon when it's close, and we've decided it's the mini moon when it's,
oh, it's a mini
far
moon.
Away.
I didn't know that one. How much closer is it when it's closer? How many miles closer?
I don't know the miles. I'd say it's about 50,000 kilometers closer.
50,000 times 6.6, about 30,000 miles.
Yeah. So again, it's about 10, 12, 15% closer than if it was at its furthest.
And when will it be further away? I guess, do you have any idea?
I don't know when the next mini moon's going to be. No.
I love that. A super moon and a mini moon.
We're trying to make that mini moon catch on.
It's not a mouse, right? It's just it's a moon. Well, thank you very much for those tips. It's basically go outside. You get a double feature.
Mm-hmm.
You can catch the super moon and you can catch the Perseids next week. Thank you, Dr. Gallucci, for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nicole Gallucci is the informal education lead at CosmoQuest and a postdoctoral researcher at Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville, Illinois.